The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press, Religion News Service, and The Conversation. First of all, an article from the Associated Press, published on the 14th of March, entitled Trump versus DeSantis, Florida Pastors Mull Conservative Issues, by Giovanna Del Ordo. Doral, Florida. Several of Florida's conservative faith leaders have the ear of two early frontrunners for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, former President Donald Trump, who lives in Palm Beach, and Governor Ron DeSantis. The clergy's top political priorities are thus likely to resonate in the national campaign for the religious vote, even as both men's agendas are still being weighed from the pulpit. The faith leaders' key issues include education, especially about gender and sexuality, and immigration, a particularly relevant matter in Florida, which is a destination for hundreds of thousands of newcomers and home to politically powerful Latino diasporas. Trump made reducing illegal immigration a strong focus of his previous campaign, often with strident rhetoric, and has discussed building on his legacy in a second term. DeSantis, who isn't yet a candidate but is widely expected to run, has taken a more careful approach with immigration developments in Florida, while spotlighting issues related to schools and family. Several pastors, particularly in heavily Latino South Florida, argue for reforming immigration policy. They want a more orderly process at a time of historically high illegal border crossings, but also more help to regularize and integrate undocumented migrants who are contributing economically and socially in U.S. communities. The faith leaders' top priority, however, is defending their congregations and youth in general from what they see as efforts to impose, through public education, concepts of marriage, family, and identity that run against their values. Some LGBTQ advocates, teachers' unions, and others argue that the issue of parental rights is being used to inject conservative politics into public schools. But for pastors like Frank Lopez of Jesus Worship Center in Doral, a Miami suburb, exposing children to certain types of sexually explicit material in schools without their parents' knowledge is a form of political indoctrination that brings conflict to a family. We don't want any government ever to go above a mother and father, said Lopez, whose church has grown to more than 3,000 members from over 40 different nationalities since it was founded two decades ago, with barely three dozen worshipers. He cited as a counterweight a bill DeSantis signed last year to give parents a say in what books are available in school libraries, targeting the presence of sexually explicit volumes. I think that the government should not get involved in any religion, but yes, I believe that religion should get involved in governing, said Lopez, whose church has hosted visits by Trump, DeSantis, and other conservative politicians. Tom Askell, the senior pastor at Grace Baptist Church in Cape Coral, who offered a prayer at DeSantis' inauguration, said he wants political leaders fighting woke mobs to restore common sense sanity on issues like sexually explicit material in public spaces with children. What Governor DeSantis did here in Florida, I'm grateful for, Askell said. For Rabbi Avraham Brashkitsky, executive director of Chabad Jewish Center of Doral, the top concern is similarly the breakdown in morals and ethics, which he believes leads to societal ills including antisemitism, a growing worry nationwide. He attributes that breakdown to failures in education to imbue youth with the values of tolerance, kindness, and a belief in a higher existence. Life doesn't begin and end with your cheeseburger, you and your pleasures, Brashovitsky said, praising DeSantis and the Florida legislature for passing a moment of silence in schools before the day's start, where children can pray or reflect. We as a society, Christian or not, have a responsibility to protect the young ones, echoed Abraham Rivera, senior president, pastor at La Puerta Life Center, a Brethren in Christ church with about 200 members in Miami. The focus on freedom for conservative faith-based moral values, particularly for youth, is proving a winning argument among religious voters nationwide, experts say. I certainly see a lot of energy around what conservatives would call parental rights. I don't see that ending, said Marie Griffith, the director of religion and politics studies at Washington University in St. Louis. In Florida, conservative family values might have turned younger Latino voters toward DeSantis, helping to account for his nearly 20 percentage point reelection victory last year. Unheard of, according to Susan McManus, a professor emerita of political science at the University of South Florida. The state is almost evenly divided between Democrats and Republicans, she said. Trump won the prized battleground state by single-digit percentage points in the last two presidential elections. The evangelical vote in Florida is too diverse to be a big force in politics, she added. But many faithful across denominations like seeing DeSantis take charge of issues like sexually explicit materials available to children. That resonates. The ability to stand up for more conservative values is also inextricably linked to the free exercise of religion for faith leaders like Rivera and his wife Marilyn, who's also a pastor and met with Trump when she led South Florida's Association of Hispanic Ministers, which represents about 800 pastors from different Christian denominations. We never come at it from a hate perspective. As a pastor, I happen to believe what the Bible teaches about sexuality and marriage, he said. But he and other pastors fear holding on to those beliefs could put their churches at risk of being sued, for example, when refusing to celebrate same-sex marriage, or that they might be forced to go against their conscience. The effort of some on the progressive side to define religious freedom as freedom to worship, but not necessarily the freedom to serve or the freedom to advocate, is also a top concern for Thomas Winsky, the Catholic Archbishop of Miami. Winsky noted that neither party will necessarily embrace the whole gamut of Catholic social thought, which includes opposing abortion and capital punishment. Last year, Winsky's strong advocacy for migrants and refugees put him publicly at odds with DeSantis, who is Catholic. Ultimately, faith leaders said that a candidate's integrity and ability to address their concerns through policies outweighs a candidate's likability and other personal traits. The Christian church is not about looking for a perfect person or a charismatic person, Lopez said. It wants a person who does what he says and a person who's aligned with God's values. Now an article from the Religion News Service published on the 17th of March entitled Across the Country, A Push to Observe Muslim Holidays in School Calendars by Alejandra Molina. Instead of fully enjoying celebrations for Eid al-Fitr, the festival that marks the end of Ramadan, Aisha Madhub has often found herself preoccupied, wondering what her classmates were doing or thinking about missed schoolwork as she tried to commemorate the holiday with family. If you miss math for one day, it's pretty tough to get back on track, said Madhub, 15, a sophomore at Galileo Academy of Science and Technology, a public high school in San Francisco. Her parents have also felt guilty, she said, like they were depriving me of a day of education. During Eid al-Fitr, which means the Feast of Breaking the Fast, there are 2 to 3 days of celebrations with special morning prayers and sweet homemade dishes. Gifts are given to children and to those in need. Muslims are encouraged to forgive and seek forgiveness. I've always wondered to myself, why is it not a recognized holiday? She said. Now, Madhub is among students and organizers in the Bay Area who are pushing the San Francisco Board of Election, which in March agreed to shift next year's spring break to accommodate Eid celebrations, to close in observance of the Islamic holiday. Each year, Muslims celebrate 2 Eids, with Eid al-Fitr happening earlier in the year and Eid al-Adha later. Eid dates change from year to year because the observance and celebration of the holidays was based on the Islamic calendar, which is a lunar calendar. Advocates, including the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee and San Francisco's Arab Resource and Organizing Center, say moving spring break is a win for now, and have vowed to fight until the board reinstates an earlier decision it made in 2022 to add the holidays to the academic calendar. News reports have noted that the board put its decision to recognize the holiday on hold after experiencing significant backlash. The district did not return a request for comment. Madhub feels some relief knowing that Muslim students like her will be able to celebrate Eid in peace, but she wants the board to be firm and stick with its original decision to observe the holiday. This effort in San Francisco is happening as districts across the nation are moving toward observing the Islamic holiday. Eid is now recognized in public schools in 3 Florida counties, including Broward County, according to Engage's Florida chapter, an organization that educates and mobilizes Muslim American voters. The Miami-Dade School Board, County School Board in January recognized Eid al-Fitr in its 2023-24 school calendar, designating it as a teacher planning day in which no students will be in school. Palm Beach County School Board in Florida last summer approved academic calendars that included days off in April 2024 and March 2025 to celebrate Eid al-Fitr. Similarly, in New Jersey, the Watchtongue Borough Board of Ed in the beginning of the year voted to close schools for students for the holiday in the 2023-24 academic calendar, years after Jersey City moved to do so. And in 2022, the Hilliard City School Boards of Education in Ohio voted to change the school calendar to include a day off for Eid al-Fitr when it falls on a school day. New York City was the first big city school district in 2015 to move to close its public schools in observance of the holidays, but smaller school districts had already been doing so for more than a decade, noted American University professor Amora DeQuire in a Q&A published in The Conversation. DeQuire told RNS in a recent interview that recognizing Eid as an official school holiday is an advancement of our larger American goals and priorities. It's important for Muslim students and their families to be part of school districts that see them and their religious identities as part of the religious pluralistic landscape in our country, DeQuire said. DeQuire, a scholar on Muslim student experiences, has seen school districts across the nation accommodating Muslim students and Eid celebrations in a variety of ways. In general, she said, most schools and districts would allow students to make up any work missed for the excused school day. DeQuire has also seen districts give directives to classroom teachers, asking them to avoid giving assignments or having large projects due on the day of Eid. More broadly, districts are recognizing the sacred holiday and closing schools, a move that DeQueer regarded as a greater act of equal recognition that Eid is a major world religious holiday. She sees schools moving in this direction, not just for economic reasons, considering the money needed for substitute teachers or school bus drivers, but to simply celebrate and promote the diversity within their school district. Efforts to designate Eid as a school holiday are driven by students, and not just in schools with large Muslim populations, DeQueer said. These are young people coming together with their friends, classmates who are Muslim and who may not be Muslim, to be able to advocate that they want to see change in their local school district, she said. In Bridgeport, Connecticut, for example, DeQueer said a group of 8th grade students got the school board to close schools for Eid al-Fitr. In Iowa City, Iowa, DeQueer noted a Muslim high school girl who fought for the observance of Eid for 3 years before the school system decided to do so. In San Francisco, Sarah O'Sheen wrote a petition in 2021 advocating for the closure of schools in observance of Eid while she attended Wallingburg High School. O'Sheen and her classmates got the petition through the city's Human Rights Commission, which recommended recognizing the holiday. Now, while advocates celebrate the change in the district's spring break calendar, we recognize that this is not nearly far enough, said Wasim Haga with San Francisco's Arab Resource and Organizing Center. The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee submitted a public records request in late February to the San Francisco Unified School District to learn who and what organizations have been behind the backlash against the Eid holiday designation that Haga said was widely celebrated. For Arab and Muslim students, but also students of all faiths, it was truly understood as a social justice win for our community and for all communities of color, Haga said. Haga believes the board caved to backlash that was politically motivated and originated with right-wing groups. We see these as very racist attacks, very Islamophobic, said Haga. As for Madhub, the sophomore at Galileo Academy, she said they will keep fighting for it. Madhub recalls spending hours at board meetings advocating for the district's observance of Eid. She said students who were in middle and elementary school were very passionate about standing up for themselves. We're still going to show up as strong as a community, she said. The next article was published by The Conversation on March the 13th. It's an opinion piece written by Holly Walters, visiting lecturer at Wellesley College, entitled, Robots Are Performing Hindu Rituals. Some devotees fear they'll replace worshippers. It isn't just artists and teachers who are losing sleep over advances in automation and artificial intelligence. Robots are being brought into Hinduism's holiest rituals, and not all worshippers are happy about it. In 2017, a technology firm in India introduced a robotic arm to perform aarti, a ritual in which a devotee offers an oil lamp to the deity to symbolize the removal of darkness. This particular robot was unveiled at the Ganpati Festival, a yearly gathering of millions of people in which an icon of Ganesha, the elephant-headed god, is taken out in a procession and immersed in the Mula Mutha River in Pune in central India. Ever since, that robotic aarti arm has inspired several prototypes, a few of which continue to regularly perform the ritual across India today, along with a variety of other religious robots throughout East Asia and South Asia. Robotic rituals even now include an animatronic temple elephant in Kerala on India's southern coast. Yet, this kind of religious robotic usage has led to increasing debates about the use of AI and robotic technology in devotion and worship. Some devotees and priests feel that this represents a new horizon in human innovation that will lead to the betterment of society, while others worry that using robots to replace practitioners is a bad omen for the future. As an anthropologist who specializes in religion, however, I focus less on the theology of robotics and more on what people actually say and do when it comes to their spiritual practices. My current work on religious robots primarily centers on the notion of divine object persons, where otherwise inanimate things are viewed as having a living, conscious essence. My work also looks at the uneasiness Hindus and Buddhists express about ritual performing automatons replacing people, and whether those automatons actually might make better devotees. Ritual automation is not new. Ritual automation, or at least the idea of robotic spiritual practice, isn't new in South Asian religions. Historically, this has included anything from special pots that drip water continuously for bathing rituals that Hindus routinely perform for their deity icons, called abhisheka, to wind-powered Buddhist prayer wheels, the kinds often seen in yoga studios and supply stores. While the contemporary version of automated ritual might look like downloading a phone app that chants mantras without the need for any prayer object at all, such as a mala or rosary, these new versions of ritual performing robots have prompted complicated conversations. Thansawar Sarma, a Sanskrit scholar and literary critic, argues that the first Hindu robot appeared in the stories of King Manu, the first king of the human race in Hindu belief. Manu's mother, Saranyu, herself the daughter of a great architect, built an animate statue to perform perfectly all of her household chores and ritual obligations. Folklorist Adrian Mayer remarks similarly that religious stories about mechanized icons from Hindu epics, such as the mechanical war chariots of the Hindu engineer god Visvar Arkman, are often viewed as the progenitors of religious robots today. Furthermore, these stories are sometimes interpreted by modern-day nationalists as evidence that ancient India has previously invented everything from spacecraft to missiles. Modern traditions or traditionally modern? However, the recent use of AI and robotics in religious practice is leading to concerns among Hindus and Buddhists about the kind of future to which automation could head. In some instances, the debate about Hindus is about whether automated religion promises the arrival of humanity into a bright new technological future, or if it is simply evidence of the coming apocalypse. In other cases, there are concerns that the proliferation of robots might lead to greater numbers of people leaving religious practice as temples begin to rely more on automation than on practitioners to care for their deities. Some of these concerns stem from the fact that many religions, both in South Asia and globally, have seen significant decreases in the number of young people willing to dedicate their lives to spiritual education and practice over the past few decades. Furthermore, with many families living in a diaspora scattered across the world, priests or pandits are often serving smaller and smaller communities. But if the answer to the problem of fewer ritual specialists is more robots, people still question whether ritual automation will benefit them. They also question the concurrent use of robotic deities to embody and personify the divine, since these icons are programmed by people and therefore reflect the religious views of their engineers. Doing right by religion. Scholars often note that these concerns are still early and tend to reflect one pervasive theme, an underlying anxiety that somehow the robots are better at worshiping gods than humans are. They can also raise inner conflicts about the meaning of life and one's place in the universe. For Hindus and Buddhists, the rise of ritual automation is especially concerning because their traditions emphasize what religion scholars refer to as orthopraxy, where greater importance is placed on correct ethical and liturgical behavior than on specific beliefs in religious doctrines. In other words, perfecting what you do in terms of your religious practice is viewed as more necessary to spiritual advancement than whatever it is you personally believe. This also means that automated rituals appear on a spectrum that progresses from human ritual fallibility to robotic ritual perfection. In short, the robot can do your religion better than you can because robots, unlike people, are spiritually incorruptible. This not only makes robots attractive replacements for dwindling priesthoods, but also explains their increasing use in everyday context. People use them because no one worries about the robot getting it wrong, and they are often better than nothing when the options for ritual performance are limited. Modern robotics might then feel like a particular kind of cultural paradox, where the best kind of religion is the one that eventually involves no humans at all. But in this circularity of humans creating robots, robots becoming gods, and gods becoming human, we've only managed to, once again, reimagine ourselves. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.